This meeting is now being recorded.
I'm just explaining that who is in a position to serve God or God in man, whom or whom he has his grace, sheds his grace. Nobody else can do the service under him, first of all. What is the criterion that it is he who wants to serve him, he brings people nearer to him to serve him in his mission or at home in other affairs. You know who is attuned with Naam or the world power when God wishes it. Through whom in whatever human fold he is manifest. The manifest is God in him, gives a contact to the others with the world and now the controlling power which is already within him by withdrawing his attention from outside. Those people who have been initiated, it is through the grace of God alone that they have been initiated. So the very fact that a man is initiated, it is his grace that he wants the children to come to him. He gives them a contact through some human pole, at whose human pole he is manifest, the God in him. So the greatest service is just to be attuned, to attune yourself with the Naam power within you, the light and sound principle, which is the way back to Absolute God. Now the question arises, those who are taken direct in service under him to carry on the work in his mission are at home. He selects who the God in him. It is not man himself can do it. And those who have been selected to work in that mission, this is his grace. Everybody is not working in the mission. Nor everybody is brought in closer contact. This is his grace. When God wants anybody to come near him, he places him in a position where he can serve him direct, at home or in his mission. So this is his grace. So who can serve God as the God in man, whom he himself mission. The criterion is that first, when he is given Dharma initiation, that is his, with his grace only the man is given initiation. Those who have been given initiation, it means they are, God wishes them to bring them closer to him. First in soul, then outward. So for that he says every day we should put in time for meditation as much as we can, so that the inner master, the radiant form of the master may manifest to him, he may talk to him heart to heart, get his guided time. This is one side. The other outer service is given only to such, those who are also selected by him. Those are given some work in the mission, of the work he is carrying out. Others are brought still closer to carry another work in his direct supervision, direct contact. This is all his grace that induces one to come near him. And he gives those who have been selected for that purpose, they are most fortunate. Sometimes we are selected for that purpose. And the service that is given to us, we think perhaps we are the master of that. The little ego within us naturally asserts, if I am doing this. This is not service. the service of the master is to just carry on the work as master wishes, that is all. By doing service at which the master is pleased, that service is alone can be called a service, truly service. Others are not service. Those are something brought nearer to the master in one way or the other. Their ego asserts, they say, oh, I am carrying on this and that thing. Even that assertion result is that it is not sweet in all his affairs, you see. He will assert, then he will command. He does not take himself to be a puppet in the hands of the master. There should be selfless service always. So those who have been selected for the service of the master in one way or the other, to carry in his work here, anywhere, under his direct supervision, you see, or those who have been selected to work quite nearer to him, more nearer to him, this is his grace, the God in him. So God, those people only can serve God or God in man whom God wishes. Those who have been selected, it means that the God's special grace are them. But what we do, you see, when you're brought together, we sometimes take it up as a business question for compensation in one way or the other. The result is that our master used to give one instance, just like when a calf, when it comes to the cow, you see, when it comes nearer the cow, just so all its milk, you know, let loose. Whereas those near, live near him, they just suck the blood on the, what you say, the milk outside, the bag of the milk. In the cow, you see, they seem to squeeze the blood, suck the blood, not the milk. They don't drink the milk. So it means what it is, if you want to serve the God in man or God, it can be done only through his grace. If he wishes, nobody else can do it. If one is brought in that connected, he has been selected to do like that, it means that God wishes him. It is his grace that he has been selected. When you are selected for one purpose, then do it joyously, quietly, lovingly, selflessly. Thank God that you have been selected for that job. You are brought in that arrangement to carry on the work. It is his grace. So first of all, he should be true to the master within him. When he sees he is within me, he is always afraid of not to do anything which is wrong, which is against his wishes, whether in his presence or in his absence. This is one thing. As he will go on like that, he will always thinking of the master. The result will be, as you think, so you become. By and by you will find that it is he who is working in me and not I. Saint Paul said, it is Christ, it is I, it is not, no I, it is Christ lives in me. This is the ultimate goal. Now the point is, who have been, those who are there, who are selected for the carry on the work of the service under the master, whom the God has his gracious, I mean intention, grace, his grace there. Those who have been selected, they should be thankful that they have given that service. They should carry it selflessly. Always thinking that he is serving the God in him, the God in man. Because he is who has just selected you for that purpose. You see? So the criterion in it is that you have been given initiation, that you are brought closer in a near circle, and then you are just given some job to do under the master. This is selection, this is a special grace. We should prove or derive full benefit. We should prove worthy of the job, you see, and also derive full benefit from the job we have been given. Only that we can do by doing selflessly, as a mere puppet in his head, what he sees. So any service done with the will and pleasure of the Master, with which there is no self-assertion, that bears out ample fruit. Those who have been selected for this service under Him, it is special grace of God. They should be thankful for that. Otherwise, even by living nearer to the Master, also you cannot bear fruitful fruit. You simply go at once. So this was the subject today, that those who have been initiated by the God in man, this is with His grace only, and not knowing that. So he should develop that by observing regular precautions, restrictions, you see, so that he may dwell within, go within, and meet the radiant form of the Master within, talk to him heart to heart. This is one side. And sometimes you are selected for that job. What is this job? To bring all children of God together. To prove yourself an example to the other people. See, an example is better than precept. You have been given one job. Do this job, please. In his mission, here or anywhere, or in his direct contact. So those who have been selected for that purpose, they are most fortunate. But they should perform those duties with no assertion of ego in them, just to please the Master. Selfless, no compensation in return. It is for him to give what he wishes, which is what man is fit for, and what he thinks best for him. So when you do service of such a God in man, naturally, you will compensate. What compensation he can give, he will bring you back first for the outer world, then unite you with God forever. This is the criterion to know those who are brought to quite in closer contact. They are more fortunate. So if the God in man wishes, you see, he doesn't love each one of you. He wishes good of yours, then I see it is God that wishes good of you. So you know, follow what is what, you see. Those who are initiated, it is special grace of God. The purpose is our soul must go back to the lap of the Father, through the light and sound principle which emanates from the Absolute God. The other is when he is selected for some job, that is his special grace further on the man to carry out the work. So those who want to just bring him just nearer to him, he gives him some job to do. He gives him some duty to perform. If he does it selflessly with no ego within it, that bears for fruit. When he sees that everything goes on according to my will and pleasure, then naturally you are one with him. You have got no will of your own. His will is your will, and his will is God's will within it. That's all. So be thankful, each one of you who have been initiated first, that will be given a way back to Absolute God. But when he has selected you for some particular duty or something, you are still more fortunate. But perform it with full faith, devotion and selflessness. He will give you what? He will give you his own place. Then he went down. Sixth Guru, Guru Hargobind. So he also wanted to recite Japji, that is one part of the Guru Granth of the Sikh literature. He said, who recite this particular part of the literature with one single-minded attention, he give him what he likes. But self, without any single-minded, with no other attention, intention or any thought, coming here, including within. So one man started, you see, came here. He began to recite that, the verses of Japji. When he went out, single-mindedness, when he read to the end, you see, thoughts, very beautiful. Heart has come to the master, if he gives me that. You see, quite as it flows of the, that, of the scripture, you see, that part of the scripture. Then he just woke up, and the master gave him, let you have that horse. And he told him, well, look here, had you not wanted this, I would have given my seat. You follow me? Those who do selflessly, with single-minded attention, he wants everyone be to his own self, you see, bring you to one with himself, you see. Those who want something other than given, of course, but the selfless service of Master is the highest, I mean, good fortune, I would say. But who does it? Whom God wills, sensual grace. So you are fortunate who have been initiated, first of all. Those who have been selected for the job under the foreign mission or direct contact, they are still more fortunate. But mind that they should be selfless. There should be no assertion of self. I am there, I am there. For this little thing, you see, you simply, instead of deriving good, full good, you derive very little good or no good. So be thankful that you have been given initiation and you have been selected, though they have been selected for their political purpose of carrying on his mission and expanding his mission, that is, they are still more fortunate. Those who derive full benefit sometimes doing service, we think we are above the master. You may be as good as the master, that's another thing. You cannot be above the master. In the assumption of yourself, we sometimes go so far. The result is, he doesn't derive full benefit. तो आपने समझा कि उसकी सेवा कौन कराता है, बड़ी वाणी है, मतलब क्या है उसका, कि जिसकी सेवा वो कराए, वो कराने की निशानी उसको पहले ख्वाहिश मन, जो वो बच्चा मांगता वो देता, पिता कृपाल आज्ञा के लिए बारक मुख मांगे, सुनो वाणियां कह रही हैं, वो देना चाहता है, क्या अपनी सीट अपनी जगह देना चाहता है, और हम घोड़े मांगे वापस. You are just reading, you see, something about righteousness, you see. Saint Augustine was asked, what is wanted to know God? It was Zoroaster, I mean, not Saint Augustine. He said, righteousness. The people asked him, what is it? What define righteousness? What is righteousness? He says, good thoughts, good words, and good deeds. The whole thing depends on your attention, also to what is called, you see, which is the outward expression of soul. Whenever you keep it engaged, attached, always those very thoughts will be reverberating within you. We have to make the best use of the things, of course, but we are not to be attached. If only we can just attach our soul with something higher within us, that is within us. But if our attention is just diverted to the outgoing faculties, so much so that it becomes identified with the outer things, what is the result? You cannot withdraw your attention from there. It's the whole question of attention or sort. Is it to keep it engaged in outside things or inward and attached to you, your own self. So for that you see we are driven away outside to the outgoing faculties. Audition, hearing, smelling, taste and touch. is a five outgoing faculty, working to five physical outgoing outlets. So all that these are withdrawn from outside, are closed not to receive any impression from outside through these outgoing faculties. Only then you can have some awareness of your own self, and also you can contact the higher self within you. That is God within you, the light in self within you. So what is righteousness? It is not to be attached to outside, but to make the best use of all outer things. You are not to leave the world, of course, but you have to make the best use of the outer things. Suppose you go to a garden, you enjoy it, all flowers, all plantations, meadows, enjoy it the whole day. Nobody will question you. But the very moment you just cut the flowers, or anything do like that, then the God in charge will take you to task and put you to jail, you see. So we are here to make the best use of all outer things, but not to be attached. Make these things a stepping stone to reach your higher self. If you are addicted or given up, or become identified with any enjoyment outside, so much so that you cannot even withdraw from that, then that is what is the result. How can you invert and have that contact within you? With God, which is given at the time of initiation. So this outer faculty should be under our control. Whenever we like, we may make the best use of them. If not, they should not drag us away. So it is the master, if you obey him literally, then he will make you the master of your own home. These outer faculties should serve as your servants, not as your masters. Now they drag you away, whether you wish it or not. So whatever you do, 1 day, 2 days, 10 days, a month or two, that becomes habit. Habit is strengthened into nature. And that you want to go somewhere else and you are attached somewhere, your mind goes that way, your feet may be going the other way. So you follow what is needed. The God is within you. Unless you withdraw from your outside, how can you want it? So if you are tied to outside things, you cannot withdraw from outside. So you go out of this building. You are the same. When you leave this body, you are not changed, you see. You are what you are now. After leaving the body, you cannot become a learned man. You are attached here, even now while you live in the world, you are attached. All of your attention over there, where will you go? Where you are attached? When you leave the body, then where will you go? Where you are attached? So, where should we attach ourselves? Soul is a conscious entity. It should be attached to the whole self, all consciousness, even in life. Then, when you remain in the world, even then you won't be attached to the world. You will be in the world, yet out of it. When you leave the body, you will go to the feet of the Lord. That's all. So we must have control on all our outgoing faculties. We should be able to use it when we require, not dragged outside. So for that reason, this diaries are intended. There's nothing more like that. You must know where you are attached. So you are given some contact within with the grace of God. You see light of God within you. You have the sound principle. That is more attractive, of course, when you turn your whole attention to that. That will just like touchstone that will drag you. But when that very thing you see attached outside, how can? Even those who are given a gift of contact with the Lord within, if they don't care for keeping themselves restrained, I would say, first this requires self-restraint, and the other is only then you can have some control of yourself and then direct your attention wherever you like. So first thing is, this is about all, but true living is still about growth. Ethical life is stepping stone to spirituality. Remain where you are, you must judge yourself where you before and where you are now. You find some of the initiates make progress too. But they don't keep their daily self-introspection. The result is they leave off their practices and they are attached to outside things, one or the other. The result is slowly that thing what he sees before that is all stopped. But in the eyes of him, he is very saint. But within his own self, he is just, what you say, not true to one's own self, not to the God within him, one's name. What's the result? He weeps inside, but in the eyes of him, he is a very good man. Really, he is not. But the God sees within us what he is. This is most necessary, as I told you. Our life should be of self-restraint, good character. You see, love God. God is within all, love all humanity. For the sake of the love of God, you love all others. If you forget the Lord, then you are attached. Where will you go? Where you are attached. Now you see how important it is to a man of self-restraint. Make use of anything when he wants it. Now we are dragged. You see? Irresistibly to outright sense. You have to live in the world and quite detached. When you want to use one faculty, use it, then when you leave, leave it. It is not so with us now. For that purpose we are given contact within with the light and sound principle within us. When you get more bliss there, let your outer attachments are cut off. Apparently you may be living in the world, eating, drinking, this and that, but you are not attached to the world. You are only making the best use of the world. Just as a man when he goes to the garden, he enjoys the place. Then he returns, if he wants, anytime. So similarly you will find it is most important to have such a heart which is tied to God, not to the world. If you take poison, now your master used to say poison, that creates trouble within us. He cries, you see. But what is good? He should stop eating any more poison, see? So that the other may be clear. But he cries, all the same he continues taking more poison. What is good? This poison comes through the outgoing faculty somehow. We receive impressions from outside through eyes, through ears, through the tongue, through smelling, through touch. So we must have a life of self-restraint. Only such a man can progress from day to day. By regularity, you see, and also by self-introspection. It's most important. The very soul, the outer expression of which is called consciousness, attention, our soul. If that is the nature outside, how can you see within? No, I cannot see at the back. If I have too much attention outside, how can I would not dare and even care to look at the back. Unless I turn my face from this side and look there, only then I can see them. So same thing is, if we invert our attention within, only then we can see. It is there already waiting for us. Those who are initiated, they are given something, some capital to start with. By regular practice and self-introspection, self-restraint, we have to develop it more and more from day to day. When you get more bliss here, naturally in the world you remain, but you are not attached. So So we should see where we stand, where we stood before, 2 years back or a year back, where we now stand. Generally, we see that we are better before, not now. Why? We should progress. I have seen some initiatives made some progress, but still they have dwindled back. Only for the decision. So one must be true to one's own self.
Good morning, and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The talk you just heard was from the Morning Talks series and was recorded on November 23rd and 24th of 1967. Our reader this morning is Rudy Cascon. Good morning, Rudy.
Good morning, David. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead whenever you're ready.
Okay, thank you. Today's talk is from The Night of a Jungle, Chapter 8, Thief of Your Life's Breath. And Master begins by saying, those who have meditated on Nam, their toil shall end, and their faces shall flame with glory. Not only shall they have salvation, O Nanak, but many more shall find freedom with them. The most urgent work before us is being spoiled by slothfulness, all because the love for the Guru is not developed. Christ told his followers, if you love me, keep my commandments. We are also told, he who obeys the Guru's wishes knows what God is. But do we obey? If we would obey implicitly for 6 months, we would see the magical change in our condition. You can get salvation in this very life. If the giver is there, where is the pain in receiving? But unfortunately, the one who is supposed to receive the priceless gift is deep in slothfulness, sleeping or drifting away in the clutches of the senses. Those who receive something decide to put it away and ignore it. How can you expect the worldly conditions to change if you are not changing? I will give you an example from the life of Guru Nanak. A disciple named Bhai Ajita once questioned the Guru, Maharaj, you say that some have had the fragrance of Sikhi, true devotion to the Guru, and some live under the protective roof of a true disciple. But there are some who taste the nectar from a true disciple. Please give me the darshan of these three types of followers. Now listen carefully to this story. Guru Nanak took Ajita to a certain house at night. Houses in those days were made with inner courtyards. The owner said to his family, there are some holy men outside, we must feed them. But they were very poor people with very meager fare, and they collected a piece of bread from each one's share and, with devotion, offered it to Guru Nanak and returned to their places. Guru Nanak and Ajita passed the night in singing praises of God, and in the morning, the Guru sent Ajita to tell the owner, we are leaving now. The owner replied, brothers, you are going? Then go. Who asked you to come? And as they walked away on their way, Guru Nanak told Ajita, this man has had a little fragrance of discipleship. This type of person will listen, they will serve both financially and physically, etc., but they will remain where they are. You see, when someone gets a slight fragrance, they are ready and willing to do anything, and yet when they leave that fragrance, all their aspirations are forgotten. Ajita then said, Maharaji, I see this type of man every day. Now please show me one who lives under the master's protection. They went to a village and entered the house of a large family who entertained and fed them with great love and devotion. When night came, they said, Maharaji, have mercy on us. How can we control our mind? We are pitifully imprisoned in this world. Show us the way to salvation. So the whole night was spent listening to the advice of Guru Nanak until the sun rose at daybreak. When the Guru showed his intention to depart, the family quickly cooked more food and packed it for their journey. As the Guru left, they pleaded for his grace and begged him to look after them and soon to return to their home. So Guru Nanak explained to Ajita that this was the type of people who live under a true master's protection. How many people can you find who will spend the whole night talking about the Lord? Have you met anyone like that? Such people have hope of salvation. They may not go anywhere just now, but there is hope later. Ajita then said, but what about those who have gained the essence of truth from a master? And Guru Nanak promised to show him such an example. Some days later, they went to another house where lived a man, his wife, two sons, and a daughter, who were imbued with the love of the Guru. They all received and entertained Guru Nanak with respect and devotion. To show true devotion to a master is like showing it to God himself. The wife immediately retired to the kitchen to prepare food. Her son came running to help her, but slipped on the floor, fell down, and died. Of course, she was distressed, but thinking of the karmic laws, attributed it to give and take, and then thought of the saint that had just come to her home. Resolving that the incident should not mar the occasion, she hid her son's body in a room under the covers of a bed, meaning to tell her husband only after the departure of the saint. Meanwhile, the husband had gone into the courtyard for something, accompanied by his younger son, who suddenly slipped, fell down, and died. The father then had exactly the same thought as his wife and hid his son's body in another room, after which he continued devotedly to help prepare the meal. When the food was placed in front of him, Guru Nanak picked up the small daughter and, placing her on his lap, asked her, "Where are your brothers?" She replied, "They are in the lap of the Guru. In life or death, we are all in his lap." Guru Nanak then picked up a morsel of food and put it in his mouth, but could not swallow it. He said, "It will not go down my throat. They have bound me by their love and complete surrender to the Guru." And turning to the father, said, "I want to meet your sons. Kindly call them." The husband and wife both became alarmed, for both were concealing the facts and did not know what to do, but the Guru insisted. So the husband called the names of his two sons. At once, both boys came from the respective rooms where they had been lying. They told of their interesting sleep, during which both were held in the lap of the Guru. Who can imagine the joy in the hearts of the parents? Guru Nanak turned to Ajita and remarked, "Now this is the type of person who enjoys the very essence from the Guru's presence." This last example was one of true living, the kind of life that we must learn to live. You can see for yourselves where you stand at present, and the only reason for that position is the fact that you do not know how to truly love the Master. Why would he who rises above the mind and senses try to keep you imprisoned here in them? It is the fervent wish of whoever has tasted the real nectar that everyone should enjoy the bliss. Meet the Master, my brothers, and take the true Nam into thy keeping. Tie this life's treasure to thee here and hereafter. The treasure of the Master has value in both worlds. So where does the negative power stand in this? The negative power comes in when we do not truly love. we do not obey, or we obey only as far as our mind agrees. This is what is called the power of negativeness. We even go so far as to give advice to the master at times. Heifetz of Sharez made the startling statement that if the guru tells you to drench your prayer mat in wine, then do so. Why? Why would one who has the intoxication of Nam wish to trap you in the worldly intoxicants? We should try to carefully understand the Master's teaching and what lies behind them, not waste time in intellectual wrangling and reasoning. When an officer gives the order to fire, the soldier must fire, and the responsibility of the decision rests upon the officer. So our duty is to obey and to die if necessary. As long as the condition of our mind does not develop to this kind of obedience, we will not get the full benefit that the Nam has to offer us. The Guru is not ignorant of the pathways to spirituality. Bhajan is imperative to right living, for the true meaning of Bhajan is to go within and rejoin the Lord, nothing more nor less. It has ever been the aim of all true masters to teach people this kind of Bhajan. The inner bhajan through which, by contact with God within, the mind becomes intoxicated with His presence. The music of the spheres, or Akhand Kirtan, the perpetual melody, should be constantly audible to the devoted soul, thereby intoxicating it, for the soul is itself a part of that same sound. The audible life stream has power to render the world's odious taints totally ineffective, and so we are urged to regularly attend satsang, the only place where we can be in company with truth. Our soul is not free from mind and senses. It is not fortunate enough to have as yet achieved oneness with the truth, so it desperately needs the company of one who is at one with the truth. Get dyed in the colorless Nam. When the masters dye the soul in the sound of Nam, no other color can take effect. But for the unfortunate undyed, the world's influence continues to apply stain upon stain. The cause of all our distress can be traced to the fact that we have not been drenched in the true color of Nam. From where does this color come? He is the overflowing, intoxicating color of love. The company of the saint infuses a real desire. In the company of him in whom the love of God, God's intoxicating color, is overflowing, one can absorb the radiation of this very nature. If then, through his mercy, we also get a contact or connection with the God in him, we will have that intoxication with us 24 hours a day. The intoxication of Nam, O Nanak, inebriates night and day. And if we study the matter, we find that all the grumbles of the world arise from lack of this contact. When anyone would complain to Hazur about inability to still the mind, he would reply, "Your Simran is not constant enough." And for the complaint of not being able to sit for long in meditation, the same reply was given. Our real difficulty is that the world's color has drowned us. If it could be bleached out, then we would become clean and ready for a new fresh color to enliven us. A dirty cloth must first be washed clean before attempting to dye it. Our heart and intellect are stained with that color coming from the level of mind and senses. We are stained with the actions of life, and added to this are the stains of the past, birth upon birth. Even if you put aside past life and consider this life alone, how many years have passed already? It might be that through the mercy of some master you were fortunate to be in his company and enjoy the benefit of a little of that Nam color. But even so, it is said that we must do Simran and serve the Satguru. We are dyed in the worldly color through doing the world Simran, and it can only be washed out by doing the Simran, remembrance and dhyan, contemplation of the Lord. You can say that the first step is Simran, controlled thought, and it should be constant without a break. This is the washing process before the soul is ready to be drenched in the color of God. One jap, repetition, one thought, thinking of one, sigh for one, sing the praise of one, through mind and body with love repeat the Lord's name. With true service of mind and body in love and devotion, one should increase one's remembrance of the Lord until there is nothing but constant sighing for him. Then there is indication of awakening. We sigh for worldly things, but it is rare to find someone who sighs in remembrance of the Lord. Simran is the first step. Logically, one will be drenched in the color of the one whose name the Simran is done. If you keep someone in your heart, you will reside in theirs. If the disciple remembers the guru will remember the disciple. And if there is remembrance on both sides, that creates receptivity. And the guru and the disciple become one. Satguru protects the disciple with his life. In such condition, the disciple becomes suffused in the guru's color. In the clear heart, the true knowledge becomes apparent. Naturally, those who do Simran will be dyed in that color. When the masters feel so inclined, they reveal themselves somewhat, and great wisdom comes forth. For our benefit, in whom the color of the Lord is not yet fast. Realize that the soul is a conscious entity. It is ever existent, all wisdom and perfect bliss. When the mind and the senses are washed clean from their dirty color, and the soul, which is attention, gets connected to the greater attention, then without effort it will radiate bliss. It is said that those who do not do bhajan will never be free from misery. Lethargy will constantly torment them. They are always lazy. When does this procrastination come and when does it go? For the negative work, he is all attentiveness. While waiting on the nam, he slumbers and slumbers. To gratify the senses, he's wide awake and ready, even at midnight. But for bhajan, not now. We will see tomorrow. This is mainly due to his regular association with outer enjoyments. He has the inclination towards them. He has done little or no bhajan to speak of, has not drunk deep enough to enjoy its sweet nectar, and therefore feels disinclined. With lethargy, procrastination becomes the thief of time. Not just now, wait a while. We will do it tonight, no, tomorrow morning. Let us just finish this work and then. The tragic result? If you put off the moment, the other moment, which one imagines will be more opportune, will never come. If one becomes lazy, then laziness will induce sleep. If your meditation is not fruitful, how will you know what is inside? Even when at initiation, through the mercy of the Master, something is seen within, yet a man will start thinking it is all imagination. Well, this is how the mind hoodwinks us, with the result that the soul recedes into the enjoyments and scatters its attention. Though imperishable and unchangeable, it is under the mind's influence. Through connection with the mind, it came into creation and has suffered the cycle of birth and death ever since. Imprisoned in the illusion, its attention dispersed in the world, it falls prey to passions, anger, etc., becoming more and more diffused. Through passion, the soul can fall very low. The seat of the soul is high, between the eyebrows and the seat of passion. Well, everyone knows where that is. Where there is passion, nam is not there. Where there is numb, there is true desire. Both cannot stay together. The sun and the night are each in its own place. Numb is the same as the ever-existent God, which is in each being and controls every soul in every form. But the link with Nam is made above the senses, behind and between the eyes, to where the soul withdraws at the time of death, when it leaves the scene of life. This is termed the seat of the soul. If the soul is drenched in the Nam's color, how can desire affect him? But when the attention is in the body, he becomes tormented by passions. Without the stabilizing force of Nam, the soul remains diffused in the world, subject to the constant agitation of the mind. Passion and anger have the same results. If an object comes between us and our desire, whether apparent or concealed, then anger arises, followed by envy, criticism, backbiting, enmity, petty squabbling and other things, and we drift from one bad habit to another, and all this is due to a lack of substantial meditation. Even if a little was done with deep sincerity, some intoxication would be enjoyed. When this nectar comes, other wine seems tasteless. Having tasted the real nectar of life, one would leave thousands of tasks to sit and enjoy it. Every free moment will be put to use. One will readjust one's life to make more and more time for meditation. When people are asked why they do not meditate, their excuse is that there is never any time for this precious work. Although the true disciple is always ready and willing to attend to worldly pursuits. We are not faithful to our bhajan because we have not had enough inner experience of Nam. Those in passion and anger's torment are drowned to death in the river of greed. Daily this greed increases, and he who has $100 desires $1,000, and when he gets that, he wants more. Added to this, people want praise without doing any good. They spend their lives in lies, cheating, and cunningness. The lifespan drifts away without an ounce of self-control. Seeing this condition, the master says, "Stop where you are. Look at your condition. It is all through the lack of meditation, and the only cure is to join the soul back to the Lord. Even a little intoxication derived from steady daily practice will start to erase the taste for outer pleasures. These outer attractions are making it extremely difficult for the mind to withdraw and go inward. If we start to enjoy inner sweetness, when that sweetness comes, the other flavor is not to our liking. Naturally, the sweeter taste will render others insipid. The master's work is to connect the soul with the perpetual sound. He gives a connection with the Lord's very reflection, free, without charge. Having received this priceless gift of nature, one should devote enough time to increase it by daily practice. Then when one starts to really enjoy the nectar, outer things will recede automatically without any effort. To gain control of one's being, to bring one's whole life under the perfect control, to help oneself to cut away from outer attractions, requires self-introspection. Start by consciously controlling a small fraction of your life. You will be able to succeed if you are also enjoying a little inner intoxication of Nam. All masters say there's no success without meditation. Now the cow negativeness has come, negativeness, quickly sow the seeds of Nam. Forget not yourself in illusion. Now is the sowing season. They tell us that the direct way out is not through karma, actions past or present, or dharma, religion or ritual correctness, for these are related at the level of senses only. When the soul is without connection with God and is not drenched in the color of Nam, it has to return to this world. In the Gurbani, it is written, to meet a Guru Mukh, to have the company of a sadhu and the color of Nam, this is the true meeting, beloved, and whoever got these truly spoke thy name from his heart. The treasure can only be received from one who has it. When a drunkard meets another drunkard, how they dance to the same tune. Similarly, when those who drink the nectars, the Nam's nectar meet, how high their souls fly together. Whatever company you choose to keep, you will become the same. Those who see the truth describe the same thing in different languages. Maulana Rumi has said that to be fortunate enough to have the company of a god and man for 20 minutes will give more benefit than dedicating 100 years of full devotion to the Lord, sincerely and without show. This unique color cannot be made or manufactured. It can be received only from the direct source of supply. It is already within man, but covered with the filth of ages, and can only be ignited through the company of him who is in complete control of his attention, who is overflowing with intoxication. You may call it the alms of Nam. Meditation is most necessary, for only by meditation will all things come of their own accord. There are those who steal time away from their meditation. The thieves of Bhajan will be daily afflicted with misery. And we have, O Nanak, the whole world is unhappy. What is the cure for this dreadful plight? Only those are happy who are sustained by Nam. Man in physical form flitters. How can he sing the Lord's praise? Great are the senses' torments. Passion and anger torture him daily. These are the words of Guru Amar Das. 100 men, if wise, will say the same thing. Pitiful is the condition of those whose minds restlessly roam among the 9 doors, the 9 orifices of the human form, who are dragged around amid the vices of worldly life. The poor soul sometimes falls in passion or diffuses itself in anger. To learn the accurate and most definite way to reach God, one must keep the company of an enlightened person, and in his company, one will be able to have true remembrance of the Lord. He can teach one how to hold this remembrance throughout every phase of life, working, walking, eating, sitting, etc. This sphere of vices is insipid. Discard it, friend. Drink the nectar of Nam. Because of the senses, the whole world is drifting into vice of one form or another. If one single sense is prominent, how damaging that can be. For instance, in moths, the sense of sight is so strong that they burn themselves to death through the attraction of light to the eye. In fish, freely swimming in the oceans and rivers, the sense of taste is so great that they allow themselves to be baited by various tidbits and are caught and lose their lives. The poor fish, with the hook stuck in its throat, gives up its freedom after much torment and thrashing about in an effort to escape its captor. Consider the black bee, whose sense of smell drags it from flower to flower until it is swallowed up by that certain blossom which closes tight at the minutest touch. We have talked of sight, taste, and smell, but what of the remaining two senses, hearing and touch? The deer is an animal so fleet of foot that it is almost difficult to catch. Even when jumping backwards, its stride can measure 30 or 40 feet. How do they catch this will-o'-the-wisp? Its weakness lies in its strong sense of hearing, and when a certain beat is sounded on the drum, the deer forgets everything and comes close enough to place its head on the drum. And so the rest of his life is spent in captivity, imprisoned by man. Now take the elephant, whose strength is so obviously impressive that man may feel terrified just to look at him. And during the mating season, the elephant's desire for the touch of the female is so dominant that he loses all control and runs amok. even uprooting huge trees in his path. While he is in this state of passion, having lost all his better instincts, man can devise his capture. A huge pit is dug out and covered over with branches and grass. A female elephant is tied nearby as an attraction, and he rushes toward her. He falls into the intervening pit. After starving him for many days, he's weak enough to be bound and taken away into slavery for the rest of his life, which may amount to 100 years. These are sample conditions of creatures who are the slave to only one sense. What about him in whom all five senses are dominating? It may be a simple matter to discuss these things, but think of this difficult task. It would appear impossible to gain control of these five senses. So it is only by the grace of a true master that one can be guided away from the dark edge of these powerful senses for a while. With indescribable strength, the mighty guru pulls the attention, and inside is the ever-existent Lord, described as Nam. Well, thank you very much. I'll just stop at this very moment. And thank you all for listening. And thank you, Master, for your words of wisdom and clarity of understanding. Thank you again.
And thank you, Rudy, for reading for us. Would you tell us again what you were reading from?
Yes, this is from The Night of the Jungle, Chapter 8, The Thief of Your Life's Breath.
All right, thank you. We had 77 callers at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now, please hang up your phones.